As you guys know, I met Todd this summer at my job, working at a golf course, and I met him on Mother's Day, and I remember seeing him with his family, and it was all just like such a fun time. Definitely one of my favorite members at the golf course, like right away. And then I found out not only is he an awesome family man, but he also works in law, which is so interesting. So that was really cool. And it just was a really great experience working there this summer. And obviously, Todd is just an amazing person. So I'm so excited that you're here and we can interview you. So I can't wait. Is there anything I missed? Like, I mean, I don't really know too much of how can I sum up a person like you in two quick sentences? Todd, would you like to say anything about your practice or about your foundation?
Absolutely. And first of all, it's a real honor to see everyone today. I was very flattered when you thought of me and you wanted to take some time out of your busy days and speak with me about leadership and who I am and hopefully maybe give some advice to your folks there in Colorado. I've been a lawyer for 34 years, and I'm very humbled and blessed for everything that happens in my life. I take nothing for granted, and I started a foundation to help folks that are battling unfortunate pediatric cancer, helping social programs in the area. And I lost my dad, who's my hero, to pancreatic cancer. So we created the Leonard Foundation, and it's something I'm proud that I'm involved in. And I've been doing a podcast a number of years because also I just feel like it's important to give back. And I want to answer, questions you have, and I can give you, some of my thoughts on leadership as well.
I'm sorry to hear about your father, but it's so special that you've been able to create that foundation and do so much for the community. It really is just so inspiring. Also, we should introduce ourselves. You know me, obviously. I'm Ava, but you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, thanks for coming on today, Todd. My name is Kenton Kim. I'm a senior here at CU Boulder, and I'm a finance and real estate major. I'm actually from New York. I grew up in Manhattan, but I played a little bit of hockey out in New Jersey growing up, so a little bit familiar with the area.
Excellent.
It's grateful that you're here, Todd. We, the three of us, certainly appreciate it. My name is Otis Parikparvich. I grew up here in Denver, Colorado, more specifically in Thornton, Colorado. I in at CU, I'm a sophomore and I'm an economics major with a business minor. So,
Wonderful. Yeah, it's great. You guys who seem like wonderful people.
I mean, I feel like I need to do a formal introduction now. My name's Ava and I'm a psychology major and I'm also from New Jersey, as you know. So
You
that's
know,
pretty much
Ava, so I was a psychology major at Syracuse University. And,
Oh my gosh.
it's interesting. I became a lawyer because of my late dad. My dad was a tremendous lawyer, greater father, but I was a psychology major. So I think it's a wonderful area to focus in college. And obviously, depending where everybody goes in life, you may find something else as you get, older into the world of working in terms of the job, full-time job. But psychology is pretty cool.
I love psych. I'm super excited that I study it and then get to work in it too. It's super awesome.
Right.
So I guess we can get started with our interview, done all our introductions. Todd, what contributed to your decision to go to law school and become an attorney?
Right. So as I just shared with you all, my late dad, I grew up in Springfield, New Jersey, which is in Union County, maybe, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes from Newark Airport. And I grew up really very blessed. My parents were wonderful. And just as a little kid, as far as I can remember, I remember just my dad. He worked really hard. He had a busy practice in Newark. And I would go with my dad. And as I got older, I would work with him in the summer. And then when I went to college, I would work with them. And then when I was in law school, my third year, I worked full time while I was in full time student at Seton Hall Law School. But I just loved how my dad was respected by his clients and how he loved helping people. And there's something about that work ethic and just how he just loved the job. It was like a cliche, but it's true. He says, Todd, this beats working. And I just saw it. And I was like, wow, Dad, you're busting your butt. But he just loved the job. And as I got a little older and I passed the bar, I was honored to be, you know, a full-time lawyer with my dad.
I heard you mention a few times how, you know, how great a father your dad was, as well as a lawyer. And for you, have you had any challenges kind of balancing that career and charity and work life with your home life?
Yeah, so I would have to say also, I had an incredible mom, my late mom. I lost my mom on November 10, 2013. So it'll be 10 years coming up tomorrow. So I was blessed. I had incredible parents. Of course, work-life balance is incredibly challenging. I know from my dad, because he just loved his job and he loved his family. He worked really hard. And as I got older, and I'm blessed with the family now, Ava, you know, I met Ava at the golf course. We're blessed with two young boys. So I realize I've got to find time to be with the kids too, and my wife. So I do try my best to balance the time in the office and the time with the family. We're all kind of glued to our iPhones or Androids, whatever you're using. And you got to realize to put it to the side as best you can and spend quality time with the family. So I'm always battling that because I run a firm and I have to be here and take care of the needs of our clients. But also, like Miyagi says in The Karate Kid, one of my favorite movies, you gotta have the balance in life. So it's a work in progress, to be honest.
Has that relationship kind of changed as time has gone on throughout your career versus when you first started?
Well, when I was single, it was a lot easier just to work my fanny off, and I didn't have the home life obligations. And I always wanted to have kids. So like a little introspective discussion here, I didn't become a father till I turned 50. So for me, I started later in life. So I already had a pretty well-established career. So I was a little more financially secure. So with the blessings of the kids, I kind of balanced, I think, as best I can. But I always try my best on the weekends or the weekends. I don't go to the office unless it's an emergency. And I spend the time with the kids.
That's really commendable how you can balance such like a such an intense career, and you're helping so many people. It's really admirable. And then to balance it with your home life, it's just really awesome. And you guys haven't been as fortunate as I have to see Todd in action with his kids, but truly just such a great family, just all little angels. They're so cute, really.
Well, you should come by sometimes. I don't know if you call them angels, but no, thank you. I keep on saying it over and over because I was, you know, thinking about being honored to be interviewed today. I do feel blessed in my life. And I think for everyone, you should take time and be grateful and do try to work on the balance. Some of the things that I do, if you guys will permit, I try to wake up early in the morning and basically get a jump start on the day. So I try to get my workout in and I try to get to the office early, and then I can try to get home at a reasonable hour. But running a business, you have to obviously sometimes stay late, but that's part of life. But I do work on that continuously because I don't want to look back in my life and say I had an incredible, successful law career, but as a father and a husband, I wasn't there for the kids. So I do my best.
Yeah, definitely. Well-rounded. I liked how you mentioned how what you admired about your dad was how much he loved his practice and his job and what he was doing, and how you found that love for yourself in the career of law. But were there any times where you had any doubt that that would be your future career path, or any time you had some hesitation or struggle?
Well, you know, I joke about it. I love sports growing up. I never played hockey, Kenton. And Addis, I don't know how tall you are. I was never that tall. I've been accused of a lot of things, being the tallest. One of them. But I thought I was going to be a pro basketball player. And then reality set in. I went to Pocono Mountain basketball camp and I realized that wasn't going to happen. And then, you know, obviously when I joined my dad's firm, it was just natural for me. Everybody thought I was pretty articulate and loquacious as a young kid. And it kind of fell in my lap, and I just love helping people. So it was a natural. But like in any job, any profession, there's moments you want to bang your head against the wall. That's just part of a job. It's not all peaches and cream, but you know, you try to balance it. But I've been very happy with being a lawyer. I mean, I did start the podcast, which I really love doing. And also in life, you want to try new things. So I'm always open to new ideas.
Yeah, with that being said, what's been the most challenging kind of part of your job representing your personal injury clients?
You know, the hardest part is when someone lost a loved one, and they're especially difficult when they're young people that lose their life in an accident. And I see the pain and anguish on the family's face. And I know their devastation in terms of what they relate to me. So the burden is huge on those because they come to us for compensation. And you have a huge burden that you have to bear to do your best to help the clients. And you take it to heart. It's hard not to be emotionally touched by pictures of a loved one who sadly died in an accident, and you never met that person before, but you get to kind of know who they were. And especially when they're young and their whole life in front of us. So those are the most painful experiences, I think, just being a personal injury lawyer. It's tough.
Yeah. Are there any specific clients that have kind of impacted you personally and have kind of stuck with you maybe in the way that you run your practice or just carry yourself on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I think any client, I take every client, you know, the case very seriously. There's certain ones because of the gravity of the injuries, you're just a little bit more intense about it because of what we're dealing with. I mean, all my clients touch my heart in one way, you know, shape or form, but some, like I said, the devastating accidents, they impact you. And unfortunately, it's hard to block it out of your mind. You try not to dwell on some of the things you've seen, but that's kind of part of the job. But I also love to get justice for the clients and help their families or help them out if they're very, very badly injured, which we have a lot of badly injured people. So we try to help get them money to help get them back on the right track in life.
Yeah, I feel like personally I could relate to that story because I had a close friend. She actually passed away in a car wreck about a year ago. And I am not sure what happened in that case, but could you say that that emotion that that these families feel and that you felt has like served as like one of your primary motivators towards finding justice for these people? And if so, what might be some other motivators that you see that just push you day to day?
Well, I mean, look, Addis, anytime you get a call from a family that lost a loved one, of course, it's extraordinarily difficult to talk to the family. And it certainly raises the level of intensity on a case. I mean, there's no question about it. I was just blessed, like I said, to work with my dad. My dad was relentless. He just never stopped. He never, like, he was a total gentleman with the other side. But like when my dad was involved in a case, he'd roll up his sleeves and go right to work. And that's kind of my philosophy. You know, obviously, I also like a challenge. I mean, some cases, they're a little unusual. The facts are unusual. You have to investigate it. We interface with a lot of different experts on cases. So those are exciting, too, because I'm learning as I go sometimes. So I always try to, you know, take my put my best foot forward and educate myself.
How do you handle any conflicts or disagreements that you have with your team in your workspace?
You know, that's a great question, Ava. You know, I know you want to talk about leadership. I think one of the great qualities of a leader is to lead by example. And if you make a mistake, you own up to it immediately. And I try to live my life like that in everything I do, because no one's perfect. And if I say something that may be taken out of context, I try to apologize immediately if there's something that, you know, might have offended someone. But you always try to make it right very quickly. And you also want to have a team around you. I happen to be blessed with a great bunch of people. It's not just me. I have a team, and I want to make sure everybody's on the same page.
I really like how you mentioned leading by example. We talk about that a lot in this class and how it is really, truly one of the most powerful forms of leadership, even though it's not what we often think of as like the typical leader, but it definitely is such a big part of leadership for sure.
Yeah, if you'll permit in that regard, I do think leaders have to lead and they have to show the way. And they can't just delegate constantly. They have to step up and show everyone else that they're fully committed. Because if you have a team that watches the leader fully committed in a goal, I think it inspires those folks as well. So I do think leading by example is critically important in everything you do, not just in your profession, but in life.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that your leadership changes a lot when you leave work and go home? Does it look different in the home versus the workspace?
Well, my wife might ultimately listen to this. So she's asked when I walk in the door, you better believe she's running the show, so to speak. But obviously relationships are different when you're in, married or have a girlfriend or boyfriend than when you're running a business. But that's kind of the give and take. But every relationship is different. Every circumstance is different. I hope my wife liked that answer, by the way. We'll have to see.
I think it was perfect. I think she would definitely approve. Great answer. Is there any advice that you would give to individuals aspiring to become leaders in the legal or nonprofit sectors?
Well, I think obviously if you're going to be a leader, you have to really know that area, whatever, lawyer, whatever, business, economics, whatever you're going to pursue, psychology. To be a leader, you have to be considered someone very knowledgeable about what you're basically leading on. So I think that you have to obviously be fully committed to whatever field you're in. Try to be the best. There are one thing about lawyers. There's some incredibly talented lawyers out there. And sometimes I'm in a case very humbly. I'm like, wow, they're really smart. I'm going to have to work my fanny off. But because of what my dad taught me, I do think any field of endeavor, you want to be the best at it. Don't phone in the job, put the time in, put the effort into being the best you can be. And then I think by doing that, you not only have the respect of your peers and the people around you, but I think more importantly, yourself. Because I think we all know in life sometimes where we're kind of not putting the best effort in. So I think that's what leadership is in any area of walk of life.
Todd, could you maybe talk a little bit about your podcast and kind of what your goals are with that and just the challenges and what you face with that?
Sure. So I started a podcast about 3+ years ago. I wanted to put the spotlight on those making a difference in the world. I wanted to step out of being a trial lawyer and interview people that I consider to be wonderful people that are making a difference in the world. Because as we go through life, I think you realize how important it is to give back. And that's one of the other things that I try to do my entire life, as far back as I can. Everybody's built differently, but when I saw someone in need, it would hit me in the heart. I'm not being critical of people that don't feel that, but I don't know, I just always felt very empathetic about the human condition, how people were suffering. So I felt very fortunate in my life, so I decided to start the Todd Leonard Show, The Journey of Giving Back, which basically brings on wonderful people. So the challenge sometimes is I will basically like cold call people, send them an email, like, I heard what you're doing. I don't know these people, and there's been some incredibly generous people out there. But that's a challenge. You don't know the people. You're like, would you be willing to come on the show and share your journey with me about who you are and what you're doing to make the world better? But I love doing the show. It's an outlet for me. And it, like I said, it just focuses on the good things in life, because unfortunately, you turn on the news, good stories aren't that sexy. I think they should be focused on, but they're not. It's always the gloom and doom and the tragedies. And sadly, that goes on. But there's like so many wonderful people out there that no one even knows about. So that's the genesis of the show.
I feel like this is a full circle moment for you, how you cold call these people to come on your podcast. And that was what we did exactly with you. And now we're interviewing you and getting to hear about your journey. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, Ava, I have to say it was striking when I, out of nowhere, you sent me, you contacted my wife first and said, would Todd be willing to do this? And it made me feel beyond being honored. And of course I would come on, and I'm very flattered I'm doing this right now and honored, but that's life also. Like in life, if you guys will permit, you gotta take risks. Going back to leaders, leaders take risks. You have to be willing to be innovative. And also, you're going to get a lot of criticism in life. That's just the way life is. And if you start worried about what other people say about you, you're not going to go too far. What people's opinion of you is really none of your business. So Joel Osteen, who I listen to sometimes, that's one of his favorite sayings, right? What people's opinion of you doesn't really matter because you're you. They don't, may not know you. You're going to have critics. So in life, you got to just do your thing. I mean, that's one of the best pieces of advice that I try to follow is do your thing. And you're not going to make everyone happy, but make yourself happy.
I found it very interesting.
It sounds like a really awesome thing. And I haven't got the chance to listen to any yet, but I've added it to my queue and will be doing that. But going off that, is there any guests that you've had on that's really impacted you, or maybe you could reiterate some of their story?
You know, and that's a great question too. I have been so fortunate. I've interviewed like 45, 46 different people of all walks of life. And one of the beautiful things about it is they share their stories with me, and many just they didn't know me before. I've interviewed people that have gone through tragedies. There was a gentleman, he came on with his wife. He lost his 10-year-old son in a tragic boating accident. And they, the D'Amigos, wonderful people. They lost their son, Christopher, on June 24th, I think back in 2015 or 16, in a tragic accident. And the courage that they had to share their journey, they created a movement, Kindness for Christopher. And it's a beautiful thing, but they shared such a heartache. So when I saw people rise up above from such horrors, such devastating loss, but were able to carry on with their lives, that's inspiring to me. So stories like that, you know, people that have battled cancer. I had another gentleman on, sadly, he passed away recently, but he battled colon cancer, and he was a fighter. And in terms of life, you get knocked down, you got to get up. So I love people like that. They're inspirational folks. Those kind of stories resonate with me. And every guest, and if you do get a chance, a little plug, you know, the Todd Leonard Show, the YouTube channel, there's wonderful people that are on there. And if you get a moment, you'll see they really do want to share their stories. Not to put the spotlight on them, I put the spotlight on them, but to inspire others to get involved. And I always say this, it doesn't matter what you're into, but do something. Do something to help another person out. You know, I've met some wonderful people. I met a gentleman who's been a 5-time Rotarian president. He's got a huge heart, the size of Colorado, which is a big state. I mean, the guy just gives back. That's part of his mantra. So as you go through life, and God bless you, hopefully you all be wildly successful, don't forget to help others. Don't forget to put it, you know, give a hand up. So I've just been very fortunate with wonderful guests.
I find it actually really interesting how you are hoping that there are people that are being uplifted and energized by the podcast and people that come onto your podcast. I was wondering if there have been any people that have actually watched your podcast and they had felt motivated to make such a change or just try to give back to their communities, and they have gone out or told you that they had owed their, I guess you could say, renewal or giving back to you.
Well, yeah, Addis, that's an interesting question. I've had some people contact me and said, you know, I listened to your show. I got involved in this organization. I was thinking about it. And that goes back to one of my favorite mantras. Put your hat in the ring. I mean, this goes back to what I really do believe. You got to believe in yourself. If you want to help someone, like I was blessed, I worked with kids with disabilities. I was a Special Olympics basketball coach for over 20 years. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences. Not just working with the athletes with disabilities, but seeing the parents. And you guys ever want to get energized? Go to a Special Olympics game of any sport, and you will see things you have never seen in your life. You don't have to be a huge sports fan, but you'd be a fan of life. So yeah, I mean, we've had people come up to me, and people want to come on the show and tout their cause. And I'm flattered by it because it makes it worthwhile. Even if I change one person's life, it makes my show worthwhile, because you can change one life and you can actually change the world, believe it or not.
that's so special that you have such a positive attitude toward leadership and how that carries through in all aspects of your life. It really is just great to hear about. It's like a breath of fresh air. So I heard you mention that some key contributors to your leadership and values that you focus on are passion for what you do, not letting others bother you. And there was one more, but is there anything else you wanted to add? Like, what are your daily values that you wake up and you're just ready to tackle every day with?
So one of the other, I guess, life hacks, I mentioned this earlier. I like to wake up early in the morning. When I was a younger person, I used to sleep in. They have no idea. You know, when I was in college, I mean, depending on what time my class was, I might roll out of bed at 11:30. I'm not proud about it, but that's the way it was, right? And, you know, growing up, it was hard to get up in the morning. I've noticed the earlier I get up, the more productive I am. And I normally wake up, I pray for a little while. I'm very grateful. I don't meditate, at least formally, but I just think about how grateful I am for everything in life. I get my workout in. I always joke, but I feel smarter when I work out. So I do my workout thing. And I set my mind to what my day is going to be about. And I'm very driven to have a very productive day, to make it as best it can be, and to have fun too. I mean, we have an incredibly busy practice, and we deal with some very sad situations, but I always try to bring some levity to the office. It can't just be like a pressure cooker. So I try to break, you know, the stress of the day. But going back to leadership, Ava, I think you have to be driven. You have to be driven to want to be the best, because even if you're not the best, if you strive to be the best you can be, that's all you can do. Because as we go through life, like you guys, I'm sure, University of Colorado, you're in Boulder. Yeah. I'm sure there's some people that you sit next to and you're like, oh my God, like these people are like Einsteins, but that's okay. That's their gift. Doesn't mean they're an Einstein and something else. And everybody runs their own race. And the other thing that I've learned, which you touched on a little bit, is you got to have a lunch pail mentality. You got to have like the junkyard dog feel about it. Whatever you do in life is, don't worry about someone else. Just do the best you can do, right? Put your best effort in, because even a smart person can get outworked. So I always say, look, you might be smarter, but you're not going to out-hustle me. And that's one of the, I think, the important things in life too, is don't be intimidated. And one of the things about leadership, I've been in court cases where there's some like superstars in there. I mean, extraordinarily talented. And I'll be like a sponge. I'll try to pick up this, that, and the other thing, and then bring it into my personality. So, you know, you try to learn and grow. And I think that's important.
It's interesting to hear you say you're still kind of learning and growing from others while you're kind of at the top of your practice. How do you kind of try to impart these values you're talking about to the people under you and kind of lead them to try to help build your practice?
Well, once again, I try to lead by example. I try to educate the firm constantly. I don't know all the answers. So if something comes up and I'm not sure about it, I'll get the team together and say, well, what do you think about this? Or in the law, it's evolving every day. So you have to be a student of the law. And I've been a lawyer 34 years. I learn something new every day. And I enjoy that part of it. I like the education part of it. So I do try to get the team together and we talk about things. And I also think that's good about a leader, is you got to listen to other people. You can't just be you. You got to listen to others. You obviously may have to make some leadership decisions, but you want everybody to be invested in what they're doing. Because no one wants to work for someone that you have no voice. So you got to give everyone a voice, a platform.
Yeah. To what extent do you think that you're able to give people in your office a voice while still kind of maintaining efficiency? Something we've been talking about in class is like maybe with smaller groups, more of a collective leadership style works and to help with decision making. But in other circumstances, like I would imagine at a law firm, kind of a hierarchy is needed in order to keep some organization.
Right. Well, you have to, you know, you have to trust who's on your team. So you obviously need to give them the comfort to say really what's on their mind. I mean, ultimately, if you're the leader of an organization, the buck's going to stop with you. but you also want to make sure everybody's fully invested in the process. But you want those folks on your team to be independent as well. But obviously, if there's an important decision and you have to make it as a leader, you want to get all the information, and then you want to make a fully informed decision, not for your ego, but what you think is right. So I think that's also a very good leader, which I'm striving to be, is you listen to everyone and you give everyone a platform and you give them that space. And then you, if you have to, you make the best decision you can. And the other thing about a great leader is sometimes you make a mistake and you got to eat crow and say, you know, you were right, I was wrong. Because I think people respect you more when you say I made a mistake and look, you were right, I'm not going to do that again, or I should have listened to you. And other times people come to me and say, you know, you were right, because I'll give advice on a particular issue. So, I mean, that's part of a relationship with your team.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a speaker a few weeks ago who was the CEO of, I think it's EXP Realty. And he was talking about kind of his leadership style and just how he runs the company. And he was really focused on the face-to-face interaction he has with all of his agents. And I was wondering if there's been any times, one time he talked about where there was big divide between his agents was during COVID and needing vaccines to attend some event they had or something. And he just kind of described how he was able to deal with it and how he kind of had to tiptoe around the situation. Have you had any kind of just tough situations where you've had to deal with?
Right. Well, so it's an evolution now, right? We're in November 9, 2023, in the heyday of COVID. I mean, it was frightening for all of us. No one had all the information. There was discussions, should everybody work remotely? So I felt a little bit like the Titanic. I would come in and be the only one in our building. And I would just handle a lot of the stuff. My team would be working remotely. And for a period of time, that's how it worked. And then ultimately, I realized for the cohesiveness of the team, I'm like, as long as it was safe, I wanted everybody back. And that's the workforce today. There's always going to be a little friction. You can't unring the bell. I don't care where you all ultimately work. You're probably going to have a better chance to work remotely. That was not available pre-COVID, really, unless you're maybe in an insurance industry. A lot of jobs, you had to be in person. So there was some friction with that. And I trusted everyone's, you know, ability to work remotely, but also for the team. It's better, I think, when everybody sees each other. There's an element of just camaraderie. And like, it's almost like a fraternity of folks, you know? And so I think you miss that if you don't bring the team together. But it's an excellent question, because there's going to be friction in any organization. You could have a 4, 5, 6-man, 8-person firm. You could have a 50,000-person firm. There are times where you're going to need the leadership together, and I think that's important.
Yeah, this I found that part interesting, because this is a time, especially now post-COVID, or if we want to say post-COVID, where we are going to have more situations of more people wanting to go into remote. What would you say to those people? How would you try to balance that dynamic of trying to have remote work, but also trying to have like a cohesive balance of a team of teams?
So, Addis, we deal with this all the time. An example is, let's say someone has a bit of a cold. Before COVID, most people came in the office. Now, with the way we can work remotely, they can work remotely. So if there's a legitimate reason for someone to be working remotely, that's fine. Also, we have members on our team that drive 45 minutes to an hour in traffic. Sometimes it's probably not as productive having them drive there and back. Because, I mean, realistically, when you leave your home in the morning, if you're going to be sitting in traffic, it's probably not the biggest thrill in your life. So you have to balance that. But I think also part of being a leader is you need to be fair, but you'll also have to explain to whoever's on your team why you think it's important for them to come in the office. Because also the other problem is this. You have to treat everyone fairly. I think a leader needs to be fair with everyone. So, for example, if you give one person the leeway to work remotely, and the rest of your team has to come in, it's going to create some friction. So you have to be balanced about it. And some alternatives is some companies, look, we're going to let you work one day a week remote, you're that person, and then you're going to work the rest of the month here. And you rotate people. And I think that also builds a level of trust and a level of actually, I think it probably makes a happier team, because I think people do like remote at times.
I'm just curious. So how often are you working with the team when you're in the office? Is it so, or do you typically work by yourself, or you're working with the team? Are there other leaders that you're interacting with on a daily basis?
Well, I see everyone, obviously, we're here all the time. Like my office, we're not really remote unless there's something going on with someone's health usually, or a personal matter. And this is the other thing, I'll answer your question in a moment, Ava, but you also have to be flexible as a leader. People have personal lives. I think you got to treat people, I know this is another mantra of mine, you got to treat them like family. You want to treat people the way you want to be treated. No one wants to be denigrated. No one wants to be treated like a child. So you have to be fair with people. If someone comes to you and say, look, I got a personal problem, you got to be like, look, whatever you need, take care of your family. Because that's the real world you live in. If you come across like, hey, I don't care what your problem is, get your butt in the office, you're not going to have a good, happy, you know, teammate there, you know. But I talk to everyone all the time because I want to get their ideas. I want them to share in whatever's going on. I enjoy that part of the business of getting other people's thoughts on stuff. Plus, I'm trying to educate them, and I'm getting educated. So I think that's important on any kind of team and any kind of leader. You want to get everybody's feelings about what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's also part of the collective leadership that we've been talking about in our class, really just working with other people and being able to learn from their contributions and share your own contributions. It's really great. So when you're in the office, are you working with a team at all times, or you work by yourself? And then like, how is that dynamic? I'm just a little curious about that.
So, I mean, in our field, everyone has their own files. They're entrusted with some of the more significant cases. I may work together with a member of the team very closely, depending on what the issues might be presented. But, you know, we collaborate constantly, really. But, I mean, everybody's doing their thing. And then something will happen during the day where an issue come up. Like today, we were discussing what court to file a lawsuit in. Should it be in federal district court in Newark, or should it be in local state court? We had a meeting about it because it's a significant case and we're trying to figure out what would be the best venue to bring the case. So those are the things that I think are important, because you want to get other people's views on whatever issues it might be. It doesn't matter what profession you're in. You need input from others.
In your office, do you have structurally, are you at the head alone, or are there partners you're kind of making these major decisions with?
Well, I run my own, the managing partner of the firm. We have a few associates, other members on the team. I mean, obviously, if there's a critical issue, like I said earlier, I'll get everyone's input. But also, I give independence to folks, too. I trust them. I say, what do you think? They'll tell me this is what they think. If I think it makes sense, I said, like, that's good. Do your thing. Other times, because they've been with me long enough now, which is great for continuity, because no one wants to work in a business where there's constant turnover. It's hard to build momentum. But sometimes I'm like, just, you don't have to ask me. I know you know what you're doing. I have to give them that level of trust. Because I also think as a leader, you can't hold someone's hand all day long, because then they're going to be feeling like they don't have no independence. So it's a balancing act. But we all try to collaborate on more significant issues.
I think sometimes we even forget that even leaders need help too. Who do you reach out to when you need help or you're having some kind of struggle or difficulty? Right.
Well, one of the things that is one of the great blessings of being a lawyer and building relationships, I have great colleagues that are outside my firm that I can send them an email or give them a call on the phone. And I'll be like one of these, like, you're not going to believe what's going on with this case. I've never seen this before. It's almost like a doctor, like you have to bring in a colleague. So I reach out to my friends, and I'm very blessed. I have some incredibly talented friends, and we'll share not only war stories, but insight on how to handle a particular issue. So I will go outside my firm to other colleagues and ask them, or even sometimes on the defense side, I represent injured people. I may call a friend that's a defense lawyer representing insurance companies, not on my particular case, in terms of we don't have it one-on-one, but like I'll just call him, he's a friend, and say, listen, what do you think about this? So I reach out to my friends and ask them for help.
I find that very interesting that you are just talking about how you go to your friends whenever you need help. I was more curious about when you were growing up, who was the main person that you went to whenever you felt that you were lost or needed guidance, whether it was your father or not? Who was that person? Or if it was your father, who was another person?
Well, you know, so my late mom and late dad, they were just incredible. They led by example, and I would always know they had my back. I always know that I could come to them at any time, day or night, if I had an issue. And then obviously you grow up, you get close friends. I have a number of great close friends that I would call and be like, you know, I'm not sure what to do. It could be someone I was dating. It could be a personal situation, and get their advice. And I think that's the other thing in life too. Not everyone's going to have a fabulous family, just the way it goes sometimes. And some parents are wonderful, some are not. Some are engaged, some are busy in their own lives. Some people have no parents, some are orphaned. If you can get a few great friends in life, because you guys are blessed, you're at a great school, and you can make lifelong connections. And it's hard to see in the future, but the friendships you make today could change your life. You can meet someone tomorrow, later today even, and it could change your life. So I was very fortunate. I've had some lifelong friends that I still talk to regularly.
All right, well, Otis, do you have any more questions? I think that covered it for me.
Yeah, I could probably have a few more questions I could ask. If you're comfortable with sharing, because I know that you mentioned during college you did like sleep in, and maybe life wasn't as, you didn't wake up as earlier as you do now. Were there any moments in your life where you were at your lowest point, but you were able to rise above these challenges and become like a better person leader from them?
Well, you know, you don't really learn in life until you go through adversity. So, and I'm not suggesting, you know, everybody has a different, you know, time they're going to wake up in the morning, just to go back to that, because everybody runs on a different schedule. You know, some people do their best work late at night, some early in the morning. It's just ironic, as I've gotten a little bit older, I just find a lot more productivity for me in the morning. I would say adversity is important in life. No one wants to deal with adversity, but that's how you learn and you grow. I would just go back to, you know, losing my parents when I lost my dad to pancreatic cancer in 2009. I would say that that was one of the hardest things to watch, because my dad was my hero, and he was diagnosed August 8, 2008. And it was a devastating diagnosis. And my dad was so full of life. And I saw my dad in 5.5 months literally go from a strong guy. And he just like was like a skeleton of himself. And I remember looking in the rearview mirror when we were driving down in Morristown on Washington Street. And I started to cry because I could see my dad in the rearview mirror. I was like, my dad was like gone. It was like the most frightening thing. So that was like the low point in my life, I think. I lost my mom too a number of years thereafter. But the adversity was incredibly painful for me. I was partners with my dad. He was my hero. And the great thing though about my dad and why he was such a great leader is he never gave up hope. He still, within days of his passing to pancreatic cancer, never gave up hope. It was the most powerful thing for me. And I still think about him every day, like my late mom and people I've lost in my life, my family members, you know, my aunts, uncles, my grandparents. But what I learned from that, Addis, is you're stronger than you think. So that was a hard, hard experience. And it changes you. It just makes you that much more grateful for what you have. But that was an incredibly challenging time for me, both personally and professionally. It was a tough, tough time.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. That it sounds like your parents were such lovely people. Is there anything in particular that it might have been your dad's love for life or his passion for his career that you try to exemplify in your own home? Or is there like anything besides that? Any traits of leadership that you learned growing up that you just try to embody with your own kids?
So I want to go back to the work-life balance. So I'll go back to when I grew up, my late dad worked from like 9:30 in the morning to like 10 o'clock at night. How do I know? Because I work with him. We used to run to the parking garage in Newark, because if you didn't get to the garage by 10, you'd be locked out on Commerce Place in Newark. And I saw that. And one year my dad was like the assistant coach of Little League Baseball. And he used to show up, everybody else, all the other fathers would be in jeans and like basically like a wife, like a short sleeve shirt or a tank top. And my dad would show up in his three-piece suit, his watch fob, who was doing batting practice. And the greatest gift of my dad, so many wonderful gifts, but it didn't matter what your skill was. You're getting up to plate and you're hitting, you're playing. Nowadays, the parents think their kids can be the next, you know, Joe DiMaggio, the next Derek Jeter. But my dad treated everyone equally, and it was a beautiful thing. He would take us to Dairy Queen after the games. So with my boys, with the work-life balance, I try now in the morning to bring them to school if I can. I got a 15-minute ride or so, and I find that time to be so invaluable to me because I have the ability to do that right now in my life. And it means the world that I can spend 15 minutes with the boys, and we talk about whatever's, you know, on our minds. I try to give them some words of encouragement so they'll believe in themselves. So I find that that's really important. I also think it's so important to be grateful. And which was interesting, Ava, is at the school our boys go to, they had to write about being grateful. So I try to instill in the kids to be grateful for what you have and to be kind and be generous. Because I say, no matter how successful you are, if you're only about yourself, you're not going to have a fulfilled life. So I try to instill that in the kids. And I'm hoping I'm leading by example. My boys know I do my podcast. They ran into a few people that I've had on the show. And they're still willing to talk to me, which is nice, the people I was able to bring on. But I'm trying to show the boys that, you know, you should do something that makes the world better. So I'm always constantly reminding them to give back.
Wow, that is so touching. I think that's so great that you exemplify all those values in your home. And the car ride, really, that spoke to me because that I never really realized how special that quick 15 minutes in the car is until I got my license. And then my mom was like, I don't even know you anymore. I never see you, because that drive, it means so much. Appreciate that time before soon they'll be in high school and driving. It's crazy how time flies. But that's
wait till you're blessed with kids one day and you look back at the baby pictures, and our boys are still so young, but this is time, you know, time is precious. This is something also that I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it's a pretty common theme, and read books about it. Time is your most important commodity. It's precious. You can never get it back. And, you know, as I just turned 60 recently, and I look back at my life and I'm like, you know, time becomes more valuable, I think, as you get older, because you realize that you have a limited amount of time. And even when you're younger, you maybe take it all for granted, but you should make the most of each day. You should do something that makes you feel good, you know, and that would be one of the other pieces of advice. I think any great leaders, I mean, I think you gotta love it, you know. Don't do something you're looking at the clock. You're like, oh my God, and this is like paint drying. Like, find something that inspires you. And the greatest gift would be is find a job that you love and it won't feel like work. It's really true. I mean, I know sometimes, like, let's say you're in school and you have a subject you love. Time goes by fast. And then there's like, you know, classes. When I was at Syracuse, I don't know how I got enrolled in astronomy, which I guess I had to. I don't know. Somehow it ended up on my class list. That was painful for me because I just wasn't good at it and I just didn't resonate with me. So you got to find things you're passionate about. I hope none of you take an astronomy. If you are, I hope you're good at it, because I barely squeaked by.
I'm taking it next semester. Oh, funny you just said that. I have I actually signed up for it.
Yeah, I took it past a few semesters ago. It was certainly something, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you probably did much better than me, but like I said, you know, you got to find things that you enjoy.
Another thing that, well, that you mentioned is that in life, you want to look for the things that you're grateful for. What is the main thing right now, personally, that you feel the most grateful for in your life?
It's hard to pin it down. Like I do pray every morning. I pray when I jog, believe it or not, on the treadmill. I say some prayers. I think of, you know, things that I'm grateful for. Obviously, my family, you have to be so grateful for your family. Don't take people for granted that are in your life. Be grateful for your health. People don't know what it's like until they have a health issue or their loved one isn't feeling well. And then all of a sudden, all the other stuff that you're caught up in is nonsense. And that's important too. So I'm grateful for so many things that God has given me in my life. And that's kind of, I think, important to be just take time out of your day and be grateful. Even if you don't have a lot of things to be grateful for, focus then on what you are grateful for. Don't focus on what you don't have. Focus on what you have.
I love that. I think that is just such a great mantra. Also, I don't have my car here, so I don't do it, but I pray when I drive, Todd. I feel like it relates to you. I should start doing it when I run, but when I run, I'm more so thinking like, how can I stop and get out of this?
Yeah, but you know, if I have a question though, because I do run it. It's I don't know. It's just something that's a routine of mine now, but it's hard to run, but when you're done, you're so happy you did it, you know? And it's hard to get going, to get trucking in the morning. It's hard. But when you're done, whatever you're into, I mean, you know, this is another thing too. As you get a little bit older, you got to maintain your health. And working out is important. I was joking earlier, but I do think the more you work out, the smarter, at least I feel I am, I'm more alert. But yeah, you could pray anywhere. You could be grateful anywhere. Like you could be sitting there and be grateful, whatever. I mean, this is the other thing too. No one should tell you how to be grateful. You should be grateful the way you want to be grateful, you know, and you should just do your own thing because everybody has different things they do. That's life. And you should be able to be, I think the other thing about leadership to go back to it is you need a diverse bunch of people. You can't just have just everybody looks the same backgrounds. You need diversity. Any great business has a diverse bunch of folks with a lot of experiences that are different cultures. And I think that's the beauty of our country is also it's like a rainbow of folks. Everybody's different. And that's the beauty of the country, the diversity of it. So I think leaders should also look for different types of people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the great American melting pot, am I right?
I know it is a melting pot. I mean, lately it's not so much in vogue, but I do think it's important, you know, to have tolerance for others and respect each other.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Wow, I really just feel so inspired from this talk. Thank you again for coming and doing this interview with us. That is just so awesome getting to blend a little bit of home life with this leadership class. I feel like I've learned so much today. Right. I'm ready to wake up tomorrow at 4 a.m. and do my run.
Well, let me just say, if you're up at 4 a.m., you're going to be wildly successful because that's a great way to start the day.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Todd. Really appreciate it. And I think we got a lot of good stuff here to work off. So thank you.
That's wonderful. And thank you. And, you know, Kenton and Ava and Addis, it means so much that you guys wanted to meet with me today. You guys have my contact information if something comes up and you want to throw an idea past me. That was the other thing too with leadership. I think it's important to mentor others. So if you find, you know, something coming up and you want to give me your call, reach out, you know, email me, it's all good. I always like to, you know, share my own thoughts on things. And, you know, it's like I said, a real honor today to meet all of you.
I actually had one more question for you, sure. If you don't mind. In terms of you being as a person and as a leader, if one day you were to, well, pass away peacefully, what would be something that you'd want to be remembered by?
Well, first of all, I thought I was ending on a high note. So let me regroup. You know, that's a great question. I think I want to be remembered as someone that made the world better, that really did give back, that hopefully inspired others to do the right thing, to help others in need. I hope people think I'm a person of integrity and character and try to do it the right way. And like you said, lift up others. That's why my podcast is so important about giving back. So I hope people would look at me and say, you know, Todd wasn't perfect, but he tried to make the world better and he made certain people's lives better as a result. So I think that legacy is so important for all of us because you do only live once and you want to make the most of it. So hopefully I'll be remembered in those terms. And I don't want to be known as a successful lawyer. I want to be known as someone who is a good person. I think that's the most important thing.
Personally for me, after, well, with reading, with everything that you've done with the foundation, at the firm, with the podcast, if it was me, in my personal opinion, I believe that you would probably be remembered in a very great light.
Well, let's hope. I got a long way to go, Addis. And I brought up, you know, I just turned 60, so it was a very introspective time for me because age is a number. And I got to give you guys kind of this thought. So you're all probably, you know, late teens, 20s. And when you think of when you're going to be 60, it's like, wow, when you're young, it's hard to think that far in advance. But growing up, I thought by the time you're 50, you're done. I mean, that's it. You're tapping out. So I feel like I'm just getting warmed up. My best years are yet to come. And I do want to continue to carry on what I'm trying to do. So it would be a privilege if I could, you know, speak with you guys again in the future. And hopefully I have more things I can share that I'm doing to help others. Because I do think, you know, once again, you got to make the most of each day and keep on giving.
Well, thank you again so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. I know our class is going to be so excited to hear about this. And I feel like I've learned so much and really absorbed it all. So really, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And our group does immensely.
Well, thank you, and God bless you all, and I wish you all well and the most success in life.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.